Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we are beginning it today, but it is our most important Seahawks countdown. We're going to be doing it every day leading up to Seahawks training camp at 1 p.m. So tune in for those profiles. Without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with number 15.
Counting down to the most interesting Seahawk on the 2021 roster with Jake and Stacy. Number 15.
Third down and 15 play for Washington. McKissick in the backfield. Four-man rush. Haskins gets hit. He goes down again. This time it's Carlos Dunlap who gets there and knocks him right back on his wallet. The Seahawks picked a great time on defense to come firing off that defensive front. Two straight sacks have pushed Washington back near the 40-yard line of Seattle. Huge plays by the front four.
Carlos Dunlap, obviously number 15, originally joined the Seahawks last year after he was acquired via midseason trade with the Bengals, and he ended up being a bargain. The Hawks sent a seventh rounder and a backup center, BJ Finney.
For nothing.
And in return, Carlos Dunlap, who wasn't having a great year with the Bengals, things were a little tumultuous to end the season, at midseason, comes to Seattle, and in return, Carlos Dunlap gives the Seahawks five sacks. In less than half a season played, five sacks and tied for a team-high 14 quarterback hits. He was one of the older players on this team last year at 31, but remained one of the most productive, and there was a clear difference. I know you guys saw this, a clear difference in team sack totals when Dunlap and Adams were healthy and both on the field. He'll be 32 this season and might even be one of the older players on this list, but Jake, tell us why he's so important for success in 2021.
Well, Carlos Dunlap, I think you could have made an argument that Carlos Dunlap was actually should be higher on this list for this team, but he comes in at number 15. Carlos Dunlap, the impact that he had last year was tremendous. It shows up without question. The moment he arrives, he instantly makes a difference. And why? Because even though things were going rocky with the Cincinnati Bengals due to the fact that they were transitioning, they wanted to be a younger team, they wanted to transition out of playing a 31-year-old defensive end, Carlos Dunlap ends up sitting on the bench, wants to get out, wants to have a new opportunity, a shot at getting a second start in his NFL career, wanting to go to a winning team. Well, he's able to do that with the Seattle Seahawks, and I think one of the things, the reason why he's so important is because of the leadership that he brings and the fact that he brings elite-level size, elite-level skills, and elite-level awareness with his ability to get to the quarterback. One of the underrated aspects about Carlos Dunlap, you just look at his career statistics, and I know he was tucked away and hidden away with the Cincinnati Bengals for many years, but when it comes to his sack totals over the course of his career, quarterback hits, tackles for loss, he was one of the most productive players at the defensive end position. At 6'6", 285 pounds, I watched the film of him last year, and it looked like he still had all the ability to be a productive player, but looked disgruntled out there on the field because of frustration of lack of playing time. And that's why I knew that he was going to be a great fit here with Pete Carroll's scheme and system. While other people were skeptical about the production that he could have, or maybe he was washed up, I knew that Carlos Dunlap was going to make an impact. I just didn't know it was going to be this big. Mm. Going from 9 sacks as a team to finishing with 46, basically at the halfway mark of the season, absolutely incredible. And he made his impact pretty quickly. Now here, let's go to cut number 7. This was the second game against the Arizona Cardinals. They're driving down, they're coming back, and Carlos Dunlap seals the game.
Three receivers, Fitzgerald that is, and Kirk go to the far side. Empty backfield, Murray takes the snap, looks, gets hit, goes down, Seahawks sack. Murray getting there was Dunlap. Came off the edge, almost untouched. Huge play by the Seahawks defense. And the Hawks are going to win this game at Lumen Field. And it's going to come on a great defensive play with 34 seconds left.
man, that was a pivotal moment because that was the mark of when the defense really started to turn things around. And one of the other things that I love that Carlos Dunlap brought to this team was veteran leadership, veteran presence, but also a rejuvenated aspect to his career just being here in Seattle, cut number eight. Here's him talking about his first impressions being here with the Seahawks.
My first days there was, you know, it was very welcoming. I mean, everybody from top to bottom, from the city, they all made me feel like I was, you know, the first round draft pick in the draft mid-season, you know. And then from there, it was just an adjustment, trying to find the bodywork people. But Seattle, they had all the assets that I needed. Everybody on the team tried to share their contacts and people they recognized. So they pretty much made it easy for me.
You know, so you look at Carlos Dunlap having his career end the way it did with Cincinnati, being a part of a dysfunctional organization, then adds himself into the fold with the Seattle Seahawks last year, who were struggling themselves, and Carlos Dunlap adds that veteran presence, adds a solidifying piece to that defensive end, to that pass rush, and you really saw everybody get better around him. And I think that was one of the things that I loved seeing from Carlos Dunlap. Now, it was a scary proposition this offseason when they initially cut him because of his cap charge at $14 million. Didn't know if you were able to get him back.
I thought it was a huge mistake.
I did too, not being able to get him to an extension. But John Schneider, kudos to him and the front office. They played the market right. They were able to get him back at a lesser price point. And I think that his impact for this team is going to be tremendous. And yes, I expect him to have, you know, around eight sacks. It's who he's been in his career. I think he fits perfectly to that Leo position in which Pete Carroll wants. But more importantly, what he adds is he's a solidifying piece. He is a leader on this defensive line. He makes everybody else better around him. And that's why I think he's the 15th most important Seahawk on our countdown.
Now, I'm going to give a little peek behind the curtain and say that Curtis, Jake, and I all created top 15 Seahawk lists and then tried to find the most overlap. And Jake's original list did have Dunlap higher, and I think that it's a completely fair argument to make that he should be higher than this. But 15 does not mean that he is not one of the utmost important defenders on this team when they start the year. And I think that, heading back to that trade, one of the things that I think is a common misconception that everyone does and is when there is any kind of issue between player and team, a lot of people assume the player is at fault, that there's some kind of diva-like behavior or why is this player doing this? You're being difficult. You're salty because you got benched, whatever it is. And really what was happening with Cincinnati and Carlos Dunlap is that he wasn't getting opportunities, even though he was still healthy and he was fine and he was ready to play, because they wanted to go with more run stuffers on their defensive line. And it didn't quite fit a traditional, like a Leo type defensive end, which is exactly what Pete Carroll wanted. It just wasn't the right fit at the time. And
correct.
So I remember when Carlos Dunlap was acquired via trade, with all this stuff happening in Cincinnati, seeing questions like, oh, is this going to be a problem? Is this going to be someone that's disruptive to your locker room or wants to play all the time? That Kyler Murray cut was the perfect play to have here, because after doing that, and there was a separate, like a tackle of Dak Prescott, I think, early in like week two or three, where he was going around high-fiving guys. Like, it felt like he was adding... Oh, no, he wasn't here at the time. I'm thinking of someone else. That was stupid. But he was going around high-fiving guys, like, juiced up, energized.
Yeah, it was the Cardinals game that you
think Cardinals
of.
Game.
Yeah.
And it just... He was such a good character addition to this locker room too, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was. And the reason why I had him higher in my list is because when you talk about Carlos Dunlap, he is a solidifying piece, meaning that you're banking on his production. Sometimes you undervalue him because if he's supposed to be the sure thing.
Yeah.
He's not the flashy guy, right? At this point in stage in his career, he doesn't have the crazy twitch, and he's not one of those guys that's going to be profiled as one of the best defensive ends in football at this current time. But that doesn't mean he's not a very important piece to this defense. And the fact that you are going to be banking on him to have around eight sacks for you and to be a disruptor in the backfield, tackles for loss, quarterback hits, all those things, that's why I think he's so important. I think there's other guys that have upside that are bigger and greater than him at this point in time due to his age.
Yeah.
But make no mistake, he is so important. And in cut number nine, Pete Carroll highlighting just that fact.
He's been a boost. You know, we've had a lot of sacks in the last 3-4 weeks now, and that's changing things. I don't know what we had tonight, but it was enough to make a factor, you know, in the pass rush. He really helps us, and we desperately needed him. You know, for the first week, you barely knew what was going on. Week two, he's getting it going. He really is comfortable now. It fits right in, and it was really thrilling to see him come up with a game winner like that.
And so that was him talking about the Arizona Cardinals sack, and boy, did he continue to keep improving this defense, make them better, as we highlighted. Went from initially before Carlos Dunlap arrived, they had 9 sacks total.
Oof.
They finished the year with 46 sacks. They were one of the best pass rushing units in the NFL
to finish out the year.
Mm-hmm. Finished 7th overall in the season, but when you really highlight the second half of the year, they were tops in the NFL, and Carlos Dunlap was a big reason why, and they need that same level of impact, same level of influence on those young guys and everybody around him for Carlos Dunlap this season in order for them to succeed. One of the things that this team has struggled with for so many years, and really post-Legion of Boom, post-Michael Bennett, post-Cliff Averill, is the fact, and you could even add just the one outlier year with Frank Clark and Jaron Reed going off. What was that, 2018? 2018 it was. Mm-hmm. Outside of that year, they have struggled mightily with their pass rush, and they have struggled mightily with their depth. And having Carlos Dunlap back for this team this year is a big reason why I feel like this team can take another step forward. They can recreate the success they had at the second half of the season. They can compete within this division, and they have a great chance of getting deeper into the playoffs because of Carlos Dunlap's presence.
Yeah, I feel like it should have been telling to us in that year that Reed and Frank Clark accounted for like 24.5 sacks of the team total. Like over 2/3 of the team total were 2 players. And that's not weird, but you were thinking, okay, is Reed going to be able to repeat this? And also, as you were heading into the offseason, you know Frank Clark's not going to be back. So what are you going to do? Where are you going to find these sacks? And they hadn't been able to. I think what I'm hoping this year is that in addition to Carlos Dunlap kind of giving you that baseline production that any savvy veteran will give you, that you have a little more of an even distribution, but still high production.
And I think that's exactly what the Seahawks are going for. That's why I think Carlos Dunlap lands at 15, because he's not necessarily the guy that you're saying, all right, we're going to get double-digit sacks from Carlos Dunlap. He, without a doubt, is one of the best edge rushers in the game. What he adds is leadership, veteran presence. He's going to get his, but he's going to make everybody else better. And as you just mentioned, he's going to allow everybody to take some of that pressure off of them. The young guys, Daryl Taylor, Alton Robinson, Kerry Hyder Jr., Puna Ford, all these guys, you spread the wealth out so that they can be a unit rather than be a highlight of just one or two guys.
All right, it is time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred said Tuesday he does not expect 7-inning doubleheaders or automatic runners in extra innings will be part of the game going forward. What's the real headline?
Rob Manfred makes horrible, unforgivable,
horrible,
blasphemous decision to get rid of automatic runners in extra innings, and I will stand by that. I like that rule. I did not mind it at all. Maybe it's not the worst thing in the world that you're taking it out, but keep it. Keep it, Rob.
See, you loved it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it because when I get to that point, I want to see them earn it. I want to see pure extra innings. I'm already hooked in. I'm locked in at that point. But I do believe that for the betterment of moving things along over the course of a 162-game season and you're adding that urgency to the game, I don't mind that they add the base runner at second base during the regular season. During the playoffs, has no place in baseball. Definitely shouldn't be a thing. And so I didn't mind it as much during the regular season. The Mariners have certainly profited off of it. And so if you're a Mariners fan, I don't think you can argue against this rule too much because we've been the beneficiaries of it. But the one that really stands out to me that is on the table, and it sounds like there's a good chance that's going to happen, is disbanding the shift. That's going to have a huge impact on the game, and I'm all for that and getting more balls in play. I'm just surprised that they would disband it altogether instead of maybe just limiting the shift as much as they possibly could.
Headline rewrites.
Last night was the All-Star Game, and just like it's been for most of the last quarter century, the American League continued their dominance of the NL, winning for the 20th time in the last 24 All-Star Games. So what is the real headline?
All-Star Game now considering a promotion that touts the American League team is, quote, more dominant than the Patriots, but without the cheating. It's just easy to make fun of the Patriots. They're so
always.
They've been so good for so long that you got to...
But also involved in many cheating scandals. But as
I'm saying there may be a Spygate situation
as we peel
with the
back,
American League.
I know, but as we peel back the layers, I don't know, you could put your tinfoil hat on.
All the teams
were involved in the cheating scandal, the Astros, the Yankees,
Red Sox,
there's a commonality here.
I'm just saying.
But hey, whatever it takes to win the All-Star Game, I'm all for it. Like, look, the American League, you're the Pete Alonso of the Home Run Derby. You take it more seriously than everybody else. You take it more seriously than the National League. I'm for it.
I like to think for American League teams, the first half of the season is just prep for this game. That's what it is.
81 games of prep.
81 games of prep for the most important
game. It all comes down to tonight, boys. What you do tonight will be remembered forever. I mean, everybody else is just kind of like, really? I'm just here to get some work in, just hit off a tee.
Sign autographs.
Yeah.
No, that's the National League thought.
Yeah,
the American
is.
League,
that's right.
We take it seriously.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We own it, and we have pride in it.
That's right.
I saw a
20
stat.
Out of 24.
I saw a crazy stat the other day that was the Milwaukee Brewers used to be in the American League. Their record since coming into Major League Baseball in All-Star games, like the league they've been a part of, they're like 10-40 or something like that.
What?
Because the American League was terrible up until about 1996, 1997. And then all of a sudden it flipped and it became great. And that's about the time where the Brewers went to the National League. So whatever league the Brewers are in, that's just not the league you want to be in the All-Star
game. Did you guys see that graphic that was going around on Twitter of basically like the cities where Tom Brady has lived getting championships, even outside of football?
No.
Interesting.
It's wild because obviously,
really?
Yeah, I'll find it.
Okay, so Tom Brady needs to live here in the offseason is what you're telling me?
If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. If that's what it takes for the Kraken to get a Stanley Cup.
Enough people are moving here
Mariners
already.
I'm fine with Tom Brady moving here if it means he's bringing more trophies here.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's playing here, right?
No.
No.
No,
okay.
I think it's just maybe he can retire here, throw around his TB12 method. You know what I'm saying?
Set up shop.
Yeah, set up shop here. South Lake Union, get a nice little TB12 store out there.
Okay. All right.
Last headline.
Headline rewrites.
All-star Mike Zunino homered off of all-star Taiwan Walker with all-star Chris Taylor in center field and all-star Omar Narvaez behind home plate. And Mike Zunino was high-fived by all-star Nelson Cruz in the dugout. What's the real headline?
Turns out Howdy did fix Mike Zunino. Unfortunately, he couldn't fix the Mariners' off-season spending habits.
Ugh. Brutal.
Yikers.
All of these, they hurt. I mean, Zunino, Chris Taylor, I'm not as hurt by this. I don't think Chris Taylor was going to develop and be the player. Obviously, we don't know that, but we just didn't see that. We didn't see that here within the Mariners organization. Maybe it was the move that he needed to unlock the potential he had in him, right? You would like to think it would be here in Seattle. Sometimes it doesn't work like that. But the guy that really gets under my skin, and it's not him as the person, Taiwan Walker. I am extremely happy for him. The decision by this organization, and more so Kevin Mather, to sit there and expect him to come back hat in hand, in his own words, wow, what an unbelievable bad move on this organization's part, on Kevin Mather's part. And you think about this team right now, they could have easily had Taiwan Walker here within this rotation. How much better would this team be with him in this rotation? And the fact that Taiwan Walker actually wanted to be here is the worst part about it. They blew it. And that part really hurts. As I was watching that game, that was the one thing that drove me nuts. That was the only All-Star that I was watching going, What are you doing, Mariners?
Speaking of off-season moves or ill-advised off-season moves, if trading for Kelnick and that big trade is the best move DePoto's made, Curtis, what's maybe the worst trade he's made?
Trading Chris Taylor for Zach Lee,
there you go.
Who never made it to the big leagues.
Yeah, that's tough.
And Chris Taylor became a huge contributor to three World Series teams.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow.
I'm just trying to end this segment on a high note for you guys. Get everyone excited for midweek.
Right. Well, you did a really good job asking that question right
there.
Thanks
so much. Stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle as we're giving away Mariners tickets all day long. Listen for the cue to call, which may or may not come up in the next segment. And you could win two tickets to the July 24th Mariners game at T-Mobile Park. It's the Mariners retro jersey night when the Mariners host Oakland, and the first 10,000 fans will score powder blue jerseys. Don't miss out. Get tickets today at mariners.com. Again, your chance coming up in the show, and it'll be on Wyman and Bob. You have a couple chances as well, so stay tuned all day long right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Your chance to win coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, biggest sports story in Seattle and really in the world of sports, at least the NFL today, is the arrest of Richard Sherman. Not a fun story to cover, so bear with me while I go over all the details, because I'm trying to make sure we only report official things here that have been confirmed and just the details that we have. So I'm going to sound a little jumbled, but I'm trying just to give you guys the clearest picture here. So what we do know right now is that Richard Sherman has been booked into the King County Correctional Facility. He was booked early this morning, just after 6 a.m. It was stemming from an incident that happened around presumably 1 in the morning. And so a lot of this information is going to come from Adam Schefter of ESPN. He said Washington State Police are investigating Richard Sherman in connection to a hit and run. It's a single car hit and run, a single car incident. A car struck a concrete barrier on the side of the road. The driver was apparently able to drive the vehicle off the exit and abandoned it in a nearby parking lot. The registration was run and it came back to Richard Sherman. Now, important to note here also that Adam Schefter adds Richard Sherman has not been formally charged yet. So he was booked under burglary, domestic violence, and he has not been formally charged. He cannot be charged until he appears in district court, which won't be until Thursday. Since then, he's going to remain in the correctional facility in Seattle because, again, he's been denied bail. And we don't have reasoning or a reason as to why he was denied bail, just the fact that he was denied bail. So now the latest information is one, a statement from Richard Sherman's wife, which I'm going to read in just 1 second. And the other is that a news press conference by the Redmond PD will be happening in just a few minutes here. We are not going to take you to that live, but we're rolling on it so that we can tell you any important or new information as it gets released. So if there is new information there, we'll play it for you. So Adam Schefter had a quote from Ashley Moss, Richard Sherman's wife. She told the Seattle Times, "He didn't harm anybody. My kids were not harmed in the incident. He is a good person, and this is not his character. We're doing all right, just trying to get him out. I want people to know no one was injured." So that is the latest on the arrest of Richard Sherman early this morning in Redmond.
And the other important note is that, you know, one of the reasons why he was denied bail is because in Washington State, when it comes to domestic cases, that you have to see a judge first before you can post bail, and he has not been able to get in front of a judge at this point in time. So that is another reason, and the reason why it also, I think this context is important when Ashley Moss tells the Seattle Times that nobody was harmed, is that it becomes a domestic issue because this happened in the family home where this incident occurred when he presumably resisted arrest, is what the police report is saying. So that's why it is classified as a domestic dispute here. So We'll get more information here through this press conference. And, you know, honestly, Stacey, when this news broke, I mean, just pure shock. And, you know, Richard Sherman has a tremendous legacy here in Seattle. He is still very much entrenched in this community. This incident happened here in Seattle, in King County. And, you know, the Richard Sherman that I know, that I've gotten to know as a teammate and experience, you know, being around him off the field as well, away from the facility. It's just very surprising, very shocking to see him in this situation. And I'm praying for him and his family that there can be resolution and that there can be a positive outcome if that is a possibility. But my thoughts and prayers are with them as they're going through this right now. And it doesn't sound good right now.
An excerpt from ESPN's report says that a spokesman for the Redmond PD said a 911 call from the residence where he was arrested was received at 2 a.m. The person calling said an adult male family member, presumably Richard Sherman, who did not live at the residence, was attempting to force his way into the home. When police arrived, Sherman was outside the home. He fought with police but was eventually apprehended with the help of a canine unit and taken to a local hospital to be checked. He was cleared medically and was booked into the King County Correctional Facility. So, again, that press conference happening here, and we'll give you updates from that. But because I'm seeing questions on the text line, we are not streaming it live.
Stacey, what was your initial reaction when the news broke?
I thought it was fake.
Really?
Yeah. Someone sent in our group thread early this morning, Brandon Gustafson, who is a reporter for 710sports.com, found the either him or Paul. Found the King County Correctional Facility booking. I think it was on Twitter. And I thought, is this really Richard Sherman or is this someone photoshopping something? And then Brandon found the additional details, because all of this is public record, found the additional details that kind of confirmed it was Richard Sherman. And it was just, yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I think it's the domestic violence part of it, which is a broad term, and I don't know what it applies to in this case, that caught me off guard. It doesn't mesh with the person that I covered when I was first covering this team back in 2014 right. and 15.
Right. And at this point in time in Richard Sherman's career, like, he's still pursuing the game. He's still wanting to be in the league and had every intention of doing so. Don't know where this puts him in regards to if this threatens his opportunity to continue to pursue that. That's why it's important that we stress that, you know, it's important to not speculate in these situations right now. And that's what we're trying to do our very best in not doing here, just giving the facts, giving what we know up to this point. And as we gather more information, hopefully we will be able to have more of the story as the day goes on. Right now, currently, the Redmond Police Department is doing a press conference at the moment. So hopefully we'll get some more additional information on that. But this is an incredible shock to a legend in this community, somebody that, again, is entrenched in this community, isn't somebody that is a former player that, you know, years removed, very recent, and also someone that has had a tremendous impact on the community here in a very positive way through his charity work, all of that. And so it's just very, very shocking to see Richard Sherman in this situation.
Yeah, and it's, I think given his close ties to the community too, it's trying to find a delicate way to talk about the story because we don't have all the details yet. And I'm trying to tell myself, if this happened to a different player, how would you report it? Are you reporting it the same way? Are you reporting it fairly? And I think I am, but it does speak to what Richard Sherman means to Seahawks fans, means to Seattle, and you try to be fair in your coverage. But, you know, if you feel like you see a version of a player and understand at least part of him, right, we are only privy to the public side of him. I mean, I'm seeing answers on the text line now about people saying, I couldn't believe the breaking news bar on ESPN when I saw it.
Yeah.
So, again, I think obviously a difficult situation for his family also, who are now involved in this. So,
and all this plays out in the public eye, and
I know.
You know, and that's a very difficult thing for his family as this is unfolding, something that's very difficult for him during this time. And you just, you read the details of what we have at this current moment. I mean, you're talking about a car that ran into a cement barrier. I mean, that's tough. That's really, really tough and eerie to hear. And you hope that he's okay. You hope that this situation can be resolved. But right now, as I said before, it doesn't look good, and anxiously awaiting to hear more of the details.
No, and I've got to squeeze this in. There's no delicate way to do it, but I have to tell you guys the Mariners contesting info before we jump ahead here, because I'm going to run out of time. If you can enter to win two tickets to the Mariners Retro Jersey Night July 24th, here's the number to call: 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Again, that number is 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. We'll take caller number 3 for those. All right. What I need to know is coming up next. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, coming your way in just a few minutes.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, it is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Let's see where we're starting here. Where is the karaoke one? Someone said, what I need to know, what's easier, to sing karaoke or do public speaking?
Public speaking, hands down.
It's not close.
Now, like growing up, at my church, was given opportunities or had opportunities where you would be asked to speak to the congregation. So there were times where I was exposed to that. And then just being an athlete, just, you know, having reporters come and talk to you, you're more accustomed or used to that. So maybe that's why I say public speaking. But I mean, singing karaoke, that scares the heck out of me.
I hate karaoke.
Have you ever done it? Yes.
Unfortunately,
in a bar. In a public place.
Yes, it was a karaoke bar specifically for karaoke. And the guy that was hosting it thought it was really funny and original to introduce me by singing the Stacey's Mom song. And I was like, it's wild. I've never heard that joke before in my life. You're super original.
You got me.
Yeah. So every single person that makes that joke thinks they're the only one to tell me it.
What about you, Curtis?
I'd rather do public speaking. That's what this job is public speaking. I get paid to do that, so I'll gladly continue to do that. I actually found the audio of my karaoke performance from Taylor Jacobs' engagement party from six or 7 years ago. Of course I have it. Here we go.
It
was recorded on somebody's phone.
Just play it.
It is Vanessa Carlton's 1,000 Miles. Here we go.
And I miss you. And now I wonder, I could fall into the sky. Do you think time would pass me by? Yes, you know I want
yes.
to see you.
Oh, wow.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
You got to do karaoke more often.
There's two keys to it, all right? Number one, if you're going to do it, you got to go all out, right?
I think I did that.
And you definitely did. And the second thing is you got to bring enough energy to where the crowd wants to sing
with you.
Once you get the crowd to sing with you, it's home free at that point.
Well, you also need a song that the crowd knows already.
Oh, the crowd. If you get the crowd involved, that's the winning song.
Yeah.
You got to work the crowd. Okay, so let's this is fun. So I'll actually also take, in addition from us, suggestions from the text line, from texters. From the 253, what I need to know, where would you take adult family members from out of state? They've never been to Seattle this weekend when they arrive.
Wow. That's a great question. Now, it also depends on what they like to do, right? But obviously, if you're going to give them the scene and the feel of Seattle, I mean, walking the boardwalk would be a good one. There's a lot of restaurants down there.
Yeah.
Get them on the sound. Take them on the ferry. I think that's a winner right there.
I think if they're into kind of easygoing sports, renting a boat or paddleboarding on Lake Union or Lake Washington on a sunny day in Seattle is crazy. Like, it feels like you're in the middle of the city with the city all the way around you. And then there's a ton of sailboats. It's so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get out on Lake Washington or Lake Union if you can.
Yeah, we've got plenty of water around.
We do.
There's some good activities to do, especially for people who have never been around this much water.
Correct. And if they are outdoorsy, which... neither of us are.
Sorry.
This is an indoor show.
Our show is just indoor cat.
Would I want to go visit someone on vacation and have them go, hey, you want to hike?
No.
You want to go up and physical exertion?
Sorry.
No.
Do I want to climb a mountain? No, thanks.
No, I just want to chill and hang out. But if you are that type of person, obviously there's a ton of great hiking up in the Snoqualmie Pass, up at Mount Rainier. I mean, there's some beautiful areas to go to.
It's like those families that on holidays run 5Ks together.
What I need to know.
The worst type of people.
Here's one for Jake. What's it like going through the recruiting process when trying to decide what college to attend?
Ooh.
What factors go into where you are going?
Everything. I mean, you just think about it. The education part of it, the environment that you're going to as a
uniforms.
Student, as an athlete. The
weather.
Important things like uniform.
That would be important.
But it's all those things wrapped into one. And where do you feel like you can be the best version of yourself as an athlete, as a student, life after football? Those things all matter. And the hard part is, guys, there's no handbook as to how to handle this, right? I mean, there are lots of different ways to go about it. There are people that have done it certain ways that have been successful. And people have tried to follow that path and it didn't work out for them, right? So there's not one road that you can go down that's going to be just, here's the way to do it. It's unique to every single person, and that's why it's such a difficult decision. And you have recruiters that are telling you everything that you want to hear. And now, with name, image, and likeness, it's just going to only be added to that of, hey, here's the amount of money that you can make if you come to our school based off our alumni, and here's how we're going to set you up during your college career. It's just so crazy now that I don't envy any of these kids or any of these families. It's a tremendous opportunity to further your opportunity to play the game, to live out your dream, to get a college scholarship. Don't get me wrong, but it is a very difficult thing to maneuver.
Someone texting in, we joked about going to karaoke. Heard an amazing karaoke song from Curtis. And then I said that when I went to karaoke, someone introduced me by singing Stacey's Mom. I was so tired of hearing it. Everyone makes that joke. It's not even funny anymore. And someone said, going back to Stacey's joke about that song, my last name is Gaston.
Oh, no.
That's
unfortunate. Boy.
I'm sorry.
So you get Beauty and the Beast songs.
All the time.
All the time.
And then, like, Disney songs all the time.
I bet a lot of comments about the neck, too. Gaston is known for having a large neck.
Every last instrument's covered in hair. That's a line for the song.
I thought he was known for having, like, just big arms and skipping leg
that
day.
Too.
Gaston skips leg
that too.
Day.
Could you imagine having the last name Gaston and you're, like, this skinny person? Like, just this rail of a person.
You can't do it.
That would be tough. That'd be hard.
That's tough going. I guess you beat me on that one. I will give you that title of most annoying.
When I think of Gaston's figure, I assume that's what Brian is built like. You said he's
like 6'8", 270. Yeah, if you can imagine Gaston, but instead of being evil, he's super nice and also an astronaut. That's my boyfriend.
And a doctor.
Doctor.
You always forget that. I don't know why.
No, I'm sorry. All right. That'll do it for us today. Don't go anywhere because your chance to continue to win those Mariners tickets coming up next on Wyman and Bob right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.